So to be honest, the water crisis is a big challenge across the globe.
When we are younger, we are taught about water, we are taught about safe water. And India has a genuine water problem. Why?
We help build a water positive future. We help do that by actually digitizing water infrastructure and identifying inefficiencies in water network to make facilities become water positive, cities become water positive, industries become water positive.
What does water positive mean?
My father calls me saying that, hey, what are you doing? Prime Minister Modi spoke about your work in Man Ki Baat.
Ganesh, you mentioned you have an AI and IoT based solution.
Most well-managed water in the entire world is Israel.
Abundance can actually progress society much faster.
Ghar ki murgi dal barabar.
Especially you opened my eyes. My brain was just going boink, boink, boink. Like, how do I not know this? It's so stupid.
How much do you cost, Ganesh?
So the world is in a crazy water crisis. You know, we are running out of water in some places. There's flood some places. And it is actually affecting lives of millions or rather billions. Right? And it's also induced because of the climate change. Right? You are living in a warmer planet. It affects the water cycle. And it affects everyone. So what we believe is, if you don't measure, you can't manage. And once you measure, you can actually change. We as Luxgen Technologies actually help people protect themselves or make sure that they are de-risked from water crisis.
Ganesh, why is water such a big problem? And what does water positive mean? What is the meaning of these words?
So I would actually ask you this question. I mean, I think Vishrut right now is in India. I would like to first start with India, right? And if I ask Vishrut, where are you getting the water from?
So in Calcutta, we have the municipal corporation who provides the water. And they also have this concept of bore wells. So there's like a bore well in our house, which has the thing for water.
See, that's a problem, right? We are actually taken sources of water for granted. One, the surface water that you're getting, right? It is coming from a very far off place. Like if I talk about Bangalore, we are getting water all the way from River Kaveri. It's almost 150 kilometers. I don't know how far is the water you are getting from. But the water actually that we had in the city of Bangalore was in the form of thousands of lakes. Today, it's actually run out. So we are getting water all the way from a very far off place. And because that water that we are getting is also not sufficient because of evaporation and various other wastage, leakage coming all the way from various river pipeline leakage and this one, we are not able to fully meet the demand of water. And Vishwath, you also mentioned that you are getting water from borewell, right? Any guess, when did we start getting the water from borewell, tube wells in India? Any guess?
50 years?
So it's actually started in 1971 or 72. So India was already then itself.
Yeah, pretty close. Very, very close.
Yeah.
I was just shot in the dark and it missed the target by a year.
So why did it come? Because we were already facing water crisis in our country. Imagine 50 years back, we were already facing water crisis. So because our surface waters and all those things were depleting, so United Nations actually got this borewell in India, and it was started in Pune, and we started. So before that, there was no borewell at all, right? I mean, tube well. I'm not talking about the hand well. I'm talking about the tube wells, which goes all the way to 250 feet to 300, 400 feet, right? So then in the 80s, it started picking up momentum. In 90s, it became widespread. And today, everybody actually thinks, okay, I'll have a borewell. But any guess how many years does it take to fill the groundwater in many places? I mean, if you consider the water that you're getting from the borewell.
I think it takes about 20 to 30 years, no?
It actually can take hundreds to thousands of years as well. It's actually fossil water. So basically, I would also recommend your audience to check out this Water Crisis Explained by Netflix, and it's on YouTube, actually. Netflix produced that video and put it on YouTube because they wanted everybody to see that video.
All right, guys. So Water Crisis Explained, watch it right here.
Basically, it says that it takes hundreds of thousand years to fill this groundwater. This is a confined aquifer. It takes so much long, and it's actually called as fossil water. Just like you have fossil fuel, you have actually the water that we are consuming is fossil water. And recently, Niti Aayog said that 21 Indian cities are running out of groundwater. So what would take thousands of years, we are actually utilizing in few years, right? In tens or maybe less than 20 years, we are utilizing it. So that water actually will not be there forever, though it took so many years. So if you want that water, you can't just get it. But of course, there's an unconfined aquifer, which takes whenever there's rainfall, you can fill. But that water actually is used up very quickly. So the point is that we are meeting the demands of water today, which is reserved for thousands of years. So we don't really have fresh water in abundance. The era of abundance is over, actually.
Ganesh, when we are taught, when we are younger, we are taught about water. We are taught about save water. And India has a genuine water problem, as you're saying, right? Why? Why is something that is on earth more than there is land, more than there is people, more than there is animals, and like not just a little more, a lot more. Most of our earth is made of water, right? Why is it such a problem? Why have we not figured out how to filter like ocean water properly such that it should not? So I tell you why I asked this question. I am a believer of abundance can actually progress society much faster. So abundance of energy has boosted our society to the levels of unimaginable growth in the past 20 years, right? Because we've been able to consume so much. The point of consumption is that it should be refilling at the same or a faster rate. For example, if you are an investor, if you have enough money coming in every year, you can live a very happy life. And despite that happy life, your reserves will still be filling up rather than being eaten up, right? Why is water a problem? I think it should be a non-problem. So how do we fix that? And can you do you understand my question? Do you understand my conundrum?
See, it's a myth that it's actually in abundance because we don't see a lot of things. That's unseen, right? I was telling you the aquifer that we consume the water is actually depleting significantly. But the point that you're saying that because there's all this river, it looks very abundant and so, right? The perception that we all have is that it's in abundance and we'll get it in abundance. But considering the fact, I'm talking from India's point of view, that the population that we are, right? And the raising middle class and how we consume, right? If I consider a pair of jeans that we have, consume 7,000 liters of water to make one. And after you buy that pair of jeans, you actually wash it so many times and it holds so much of water when you actually wash it. So it's a myth, in my opinion, that we have abundant water. So that's the first thing I would like to say, right? Second thing is, despite there are some regions where water is in abundance, the problem with water is, unlike energy that you gave in analogy, right? And it's comparatively newer commodity, considering the history of humankind, is water has been for a long time. So it's always, people have never charged for water, right? I think probably in the prehistoric era, it was abundant because the water was only consumed for drinking and bathing and things like that. And some amount of was involved in manufacturing and other industrial, pre-industrial era. So the truth is that the water is not so abundant as it used to be prehistoric era. The second thing is that things that are actually provided are free of cost. Like, you know, the economic term tragedy of commons kicks in, right? Things that are actually available freely to all of us is abused by individuals for their personal need, personal greed, and things like that, right? I mean, if you consider a borewell is available for all, right? I mean, the groundwater is available for, once you put the borewell, you consume water as much as you want, right? And you don't have any limit on it. So basically, the fact that it was freely available, it became scarce.
His point is not that fresh water is abundant or anything like that. But as we know, 75% of the earth is oceans, right? We only have 25% of earth being covered by land. The rest is all oceans. It's all water. It's undrinkable, unusable water. But at the end of the day, it is water. So his question, if I understood it correctly, is that why have we as humans not been able to figure out a way to use this water that is available, that is currently available to us but unusable? Why can we not make it usable? At least for industrial purposes, at least for maybe, you know, purposes that do not involve drinking. Because I know there is a whole complication there that, you know, you have to desalinize it and that taste is not there, the minerals are not there, whatever. There's a lot of complications there. But I'm sure a pair of jeans doesn't require fresh water. It can be made with saline water. So I think that's where Akhil's question came from.
See, the point is that when you're getting something at a very, very low cost, the fresh water from the rivers, right? So everything is benchmarked to that, right? You're going to get water at that lowest price. Any other form of water, the unit economics itself would be very different.
Got it.
That's why people would rarely innovate on something where the alternative is super cheap, right? So that's again the tragedy of commons.
It's again the fossil fuel thing, man. When oil was so cheap that everyone's like, why not just use oil? Why bother going green when you have energy available to you so cheap?
The stat of 7,000 liters used for a jeans just like, you know, messed up my brain. So how many other such things exist? You know, because I was always aware that milk takes up a lot of water. To consume 1 liter of milk, you need some 1,000 liters of water because you need to feed the cow and you need to feed the farms and, you know, everything goes into that. But so many hidden things, right? So what other things, you know, really should mess up my brain?
See, if I actually end up sharing the stat, you start consuming all of these people things. And like, for example, you stop eating chocolates forever in your life or gifting somebody a chocolate, right? That the amount of water footprint. Or if you consume non-veg, then you would immediately stop consuming beef and other things, right? So, yeah, I mean, see, the thing is, all these things are hidden and we don't know. We have taken all these things for granted, right? And if India is a manufacturing hub or a production hub for the world, we are not just actually exporting things. We are also indirectly exporting water to the rest of the world, right? So India, unfortunately, India is the largest consumer of groundwater. In fact, it consumes groundwater equivalent to some of US and China put together. The fact is that one is there's a mismanagement of water, that we all waste it in various ways, and we also produce a lot of things, and even our agriculture practices are also not very efficient. So in a way, the water crisis is an artificial problem that we all created. It's right. I mean, it's also when I tell climate change has effect, it is said that if climate change is shark, water is its teeth. Because when the planet becomes warmer, what affects the most is the precipitation, evapotranspiration, hydrology, and it changes the whole water cycle. So we have actually messed up with the whole water cycle. And so what used to be like a very good rainfall in a season, rainfall season, now you get intense rainfall for a shorter duration. So one is we can't store that amount of water. It leads to flood and it goes to the storm water and it is unusable. And at the same time, you don't get rainfall for a duration of time, and then it leads to drought. So we have seen many places where, like Chennai and other places, the same year they would have drought as well as flood. So yeah, I mean, since we have considered, you know, and also I have to mention, I rather ask this question: when was the last time oil industry made highest profit?
Last year.
Exactly. So last year, oil industry made the highest profit, right? So what it means is there is climate change happening at a highest pace, right? I mean, so that means the mitigation is not catching up.
There is absolutely no denying that. Just before we move ahead, I need you to define a few things. Can you just briefly define the water cycle? I think you used the word evapotranspiration,
yes.
Evapotranspiration, there you go, that's the word. Can you define a couple of these words, please?
See, to be honest, water cycle is not as straightforward as we learn in the high school, but it is quite complicated when you think from the climate lens and all this lens. But yeah, basically, how do we get rainfall? Basically, the water gets evaporated from the ocean and various other sources become clouds, and then there's a rainfall. Based on various condition, humidity, and various other, during that based on the pressure levels and things like that, it condenses and you get a rain, right? So that happens at a very at certain conditions, right? And it involves temperature as a very important. And that if that temperature gets affected, it's like a temperature is a kernel, how warm the planet is a kernel to a lot of things, right? And if that gets affected, it leads to perturbation in the rainfall, right? It affects in various ways. But yeah, I'm not a hydrologist. I would say that a hydrologist or hydrogeologist would be able to explain it in a much better way.
And what is evapotranspiration?
So the whatever is the water that is there in wherever source, it gets transported as clouds, right? So that is the evapotranspiration.
Ganesh, why is water a non-problem here? Why is water a non-problem in Canada? And why is water a non-problem in US? Like, they don't even discuss that don't waste water or shut your tap when you're brushing, right? All of these are a very India-centric, India-specific things. And yet you don't hear that there is a water shortage here. In fact, you know, they have a very nice thing about all the water. Almost all of it is recycled and put back into the taps. So why is that not happening in India? Or is it happening in India and we just don't know?
So to be honest, the water crisis is a big challenge across the globe. In fact, US has started trading waters in future market. Can you believe it? I'm saying that there's a price, water is traded in CMI. So it's again, it's not just a problem in India, it's a problem across the globe, right? You know, the place where there's not a real water problem, maybe a country like Israel, because they always had scarcity of water. You know, where there's no water problem in India, maybe Rajasthan. I don't know if you've been to Udaipur, you should definitely go there, right? You would see that they actually have built beautiful lakes, right? And they actually worked towards something they knew is going to be a big challenge to the society. So you'd see problems in water where there was abundance of water. You'd see economies where there is abundance of wealth going into big crisis. I don't want to name the states in the country, but you know which were the states in India which was the most wealthiest in terms of minerals. But they are not the most GDP state, highest GDP states, right?
Dude, I am going to be less politically correct and just give it very, very bluntly. There is a saying in Hindi. It's called ghar ki murgi dal barabar. That means what you have at home, you don't value. So it's basically what you're saying, that where there is abundance, that is not valued. So it sort of works the opposite to what Akhil was starting us off with. He said that the abundance of something is what we should go towards. But the issue often with abundance is that when you have abundance of a certain commodity, a certain service, whatever it may be, there is no value for it.
So that, especially like I'm being from Kolkata, we've heard this very often and things like that, that in West Bengal, historically, the soil was so fertile that one didn't have to really toil to get good crop, which is why a lot of the people here became poets and, you know, philosophers and things, because they had a lot of free time on their hands because their hard work didn't have to be there. So that's why they say now that, you know, things are getting harder and, you know, people are requiring to put in more work, people in West Bengal don't know how to work. They're like, oh, we've never worked. We've never had to work. So that culture of that, you know, hustle and hard work and toil, that does not come because of abundance of something that didn't drive that culture. And you'll see that across the board in West Bengal. You come here and you ask someone to work 10 hours a day. They will say, you can pay me as much as you want. I'm not working that much.
Yeah, I mean, same holds good with some place like Israel, right? They didn't never had water. They get 2 mm of rainfall per year. The most well-managed water in the entire world is Israel. I mean, Israel is light years ahead of other countries. Like, they even grow mango in a desert, right? So, I mean, so the fact is that when whatever is, you get in huge abundance, as you rightly said, Mahindi is not so good. But I understand that ghar ki murgi, dal barabar. Is that correct?
Chicken at home is equivalent to dal. Translating it directly.
So the point is, see, the problem of water is because we always thought it was abundant and it was becoming depleting at an exponential rate. And today we have reached a point that we can't afford any more such level of atrocities on water. Right. I mean, it will. I mean, another aspect of water I've talked about, one about the disruption of the availability of water. The other aspect of water is the quality of water. Any guess what's the quality of water that you drink in India or any part of the world? Probably not, right? I mean, we just take it for granted. So the fact that we are consuming the jeans or various clothing and various other things that we consume, right? It's also leading to manufacturing of it. And technically, the manufacturing, when it happens, it also leads a lot of effluent water into the environment. And considering the fact that our consumption has increased and environmental law has, though there are very good regulations, but the enforcement is very weak, a lot of contaminated water is entering the water sources, because of which we are getting all kinds of diseases and various other challenges. So, according to Niti Aayog report itself, it says 70% of water in India is contaminated. I mean, like, so you can imagine. So, it's just not only about the availability, it's also the quality of water that we consume is so massively affected. And it eventually becomes that only the rich can afford drinking water in the long run. And that actually happened today, right? If I say 70% of Indian water is contaminated, it's people who can afford this one, right? I mean, treated water, whether it's a bottled water, or you can have sophisticated water purifier, you can afford it, drinking water. So water we've got into all this kind of challenges because of not respecting the water.
We actually did an episode with Manish. And Manish runs a consulting firm, BMRV. They consult government on their water filtration plants that they set up in different states and different cities. And he was talking about how the water filtration plants in India are up to par with the rest of the world. The problem that starts happening is, you know, somewhere somebody broke a pipe and redirected that water to their village. Or what happens on the route to your house, you don't know. Hence, you can't consume your tap water. And then you need more sophisticated RO systems at home. Ganesh, I want to ask you, what is FluxGen doing? How is FluxGen solving all of these enormous problems that we have named in our conversation till now?
And what is water positivity, which you spoke about in your opening remark?
The challenges of water crisis is overwhelming, right? So we are a small startup. So we wanted to pick one area and ace it and eventually see how we can work on a larger problem of water as we scale, right? So The problem that Fluxgen caters to today is solving the water challenges for industries. Two reasons. One, industries are large guzzlers of water. And the second thing is industries are the large polluters of water. So if you fix the problem of industry, and industries also buy water at the highest price, right? So the unit economics of any solution for water, if it works, somewhere it is in industry. So we chose to work with industries first. So we digitize water infrastructure for large industries, identify inefficiencies in the water network by using Internet of Things and artificial intelligence. We get this data of water in the entire facility. We provide prescriptive alerts on our web dashboard and mobile apps and help the facility management to reduce water consumption by up to 30%. And also comply to all the regulation and ensure their water is treated in the most most preferred way according to the regulation. And ensure that they are not under any risk with respect to water. And they can actually make sure that they can have enough water that they don't have to get water from the grid or the municipality or groundwater. So that is by becoming water positive. So to add, what is water positive? Is basically you come up with various initiatives like rainwater harvesting, wastewater treatment, and water conservation to ensure that you are able to fulfill your water needs by without actually consuming water from other sources. And we have developed a platform to help them become water positive so that they can be off-grid eventually.
Sounds like we are discussing energy, honestly. It just sounded like we are discussing electricity, you know, rather than water. And you don't, mine doesn't go there. Mine doesn't go to water has a grid.
And I was about to ask, what is off-grid for water? How do you go... For electricity, I mean, it's the most obvious thing that what's off the grid? You supply your own power. But how the hell do you supply your own water?
See, we are all consuming water from the grid, from what Vishrut mentioned, right? He's getting water from the tap and he's getting water from borewell. Basically, the water from the river goes through a water distribution network that the municipality offers. So basically, there's a pipeline network. So there's a grid that ensures that he gets water at his home. Now that when he's talking about groundwater, basically the aquifers go through acres together or kilometers together, square kilometers. So it is basically when you consider hundreds of houses or thousands of houses, or maybe hundreds of houses in a village, all of them might be under the same aquifer. Basically, the aquifer, the groundwater, is also a grid. It might be a smaller grid, like a mini grid, but still it's a grid. So to say, when you're telling, I come from a solar background. My earlier life was in solar, so I try to use those terminologies. Is that when you're telling you're trying to be off-grid, how do you become off-grid in solar? You put up solar energy, you harvest the energy and you utilize it and distribute it within your house, right? Same thing with water also. You can actually... harvest the water. Unlike solar, of course, you don't get water on a daily basis, but you can still harvest. You have to have a storage. Just like you have solar, you have battery as a storage. In terms of water, you're actually building a huge sump, right? And then you store that water, or you actually put it to the groundwater so that everybody gets the benefit of it. And then you actually reduce your consumption. Like in your grid, you do energy efficiency too, so that you consume least amount of energy. Same thing you can do in water consumption. Can you use intervention where your consumption of water is minimum? By doing all the three things, harvesting and reducing the wastage of water, improving the efficiency of water, conserving water, and treating the water. So if you are able to 100% treat the water, you never have to consume that, get water from anywhere. But there's a challenge. The technology in treating has not reached that unit economics of scale that people would treat the water, because of which you have to take part of it from the grid, right? Because you don't treat 100% water. The water treatment plant in a textile or dyeing can actually be utilized again. But can the water utilized in a food processing industry, can it be utilized back? No, the technology has not reached a level where they would take it back. At least maybe it is. It works in Israel. They have reached that level of sophistication, the cost of economics.
You need to move to Israel.
Let There Be Water is a great book. You guys should recommend your audience. You will learn a lot of great things about how Israel has been able to do.
Dude, talking about this water harvesting thing, I mean, this is honestly something that I have considered doing in a big way. So, in fact, I had visited Ahmedabad and visited some of the old part of the city. And I saw a lot of the old havelis and the old houses that are there in Ahmedabad, which have been there for ages. They all had underwater, like, you know, sub-basement level tankers. Every single household had a tank for like 1 lakh liters, 1.5 lakh liters. But you've just sort of mentioned the point that I had for this, that rainwater, as much as we can harvest it and whatever we can get, how do you treat it, especially at a home level? And how do you make sure it's safe enough for you yourself to drink?
I want to add to the harvesting question, because the numbers you threw out are so massive, right? 7,500 liters for one jeans, and then 1,000 liters for one glass of milk, and like God knows how many liters for my camera, right? So does it make a difference? Does it really matter if I start harvesting water today, have a tanker which is like a few thousand, or like Vishu said, 1 lakh gallons, which is 10 jeans? Like, will that really make a dent in the problem, or is it the larger industries that have to think of this problem on a more wide scale? Because my mind is blown right now.
See, we shouldn't simplify the problem so in that level, right? There's a challenge with water which has second order, third order effect. So the simple rule I would say is, if you are reducing your water intake, It reduces the burden on a setup like an urban setup where water is a competition, right? You are making sure that you're becoming part of that excessive user and affecting that competition, right? I'll give you 2-3 examples why you should not just think from that point. The amount of water that you consume from the aquifer, it's just not only you are consuming so much of water, you're actually depleting the water resource in the groundwater aquifer, which acts like a sponge when there's an earthquake, right? That water is just not only you're drinking, you're affecting the geology, and it affects. And assume again, if you're reducing your, you're not polluting the water, right? I mean, assume you're not polluting. So the water that goes into the, like, assume you're very good consumer of water. You don't use phenol and all those chemicals in your toilets, but use organic. So that will be easy to treat, the wastewater treatment that goes in, right? It's easy to break down those chemicals because it's organic. So that way, the water, you're not polluting the water in your environment. And that ensures that people don't get diseases and get into all kinds of challenges. So what is very important is every individual start actually practicing the same habits in water. It flows down at all levels, and we can actually solve water crisis. Like you talked about the camera, I would want to give the thing that, you know, Taiwan Semiconductor Company, where a lot of this electronic comes. They are operating in a place where they had to shut down agriculture because amount of water required to make chips is so high. And they actually are feeding the farmers there from the profits that they make. And they still get 100 tankers of water per day. So, so the best thing that we can all do is, how can we reduce our consumption, right? I mean, don't buy crazy stuff which we don't need, right? And there's something that I want to, I like the most in this movie called Fight Club. I don't know if you guys have seen the movie. Taylor Durand talks to Edward Norton in the movie, and it says, like, things that you own will start owning you, right? So unfortunately, things that you own will also affect the planet. And we don't even know. I've just talked about how earthquake and water is connected. And if you consider, you just talked about the water distribution, one of your previous speakers said, right? Yes, the distribution has its own impact. Like Karaikal, which is a Pondicherry territory, had a cholera outbreak recently. And a lot of people died and also got affected. The reason was the sewage pipeline and the drinking pipeline were close to each other and there's a leakage and it affected the whole water pipeline. So the unintended, the consequence of mismanagement of water can, at a micro level to macro level, all has its own implications. So please don't think that I do this small thing, will it save the planet? The question is not even saving the planet. Planet is going to be there. We are going to get messed up. So it in the best interest of us, we have to do what is the right thing to do.
So Ganesh, while you were talking, I was just doing some Googling and just throwing out some water usage numbers. So as Akhil said, you mentioned earlier in the conversation that one pair of jeans takes about 7,500 liters of water. When we take a 5-10 minute shower, we use between 90 to 160 liters of water. And going back to chips, one large chip factory uses 10 million gallons of water per day, which is equivalent to the usage of 300,000 households. So these are just some numbers that sound like I have picked them out of my backside. Just because they're so warped. Like, what is 10 million gallons, man? Like, you know, I can't even think of that number.
Yeah, I don't think humans can picture so much water in one place.
See, that's what we are all consuming that water without our knowledge, right? And I don't even forget about what fluxion does. Like, leave it aside. I would rather say if you want to solve the problem, start reducing your intake of consuming things, right? I mean, like, I personally don't own a car. I don't even have a driving license. I'm 40 years old. And if I'm almost like an environmental officer at home, like my spouse, my wife, she says, like, why don't we get a good furniture, get a table tennis? Then my first question to her is, so are we going to get it from a fallen tree? She's like, what is a fallen tree? I mean, like, then I saw like a tree that has fallen and it's end of life, it's over, so now you can use it. Then eventually she realized that, okay, I can't get away with this, so we'll eventually buy something from OLX or something. But we still don't have a dining table. But the point I want to drive is, see, tech is great, and that's why I think we work in the space where we are trying to tell how much water you are consuming, how can you can reduce your consumption. But what is the most common sense thing to do is how do we not consume things that we don't need? How can we actually consume only things that are of paramount importance to us? We end up just buying things without knowing how it is going to affect the society at large. I wouldn't even say the planet, right? Planet is going to be, is there for billions of years and it will be there for billions of years. It's only us who are going to get messed up. The history of humanity is much shorter than the planet. Right. So my point is that how do we responsibly consume resources? How do we responsibly consume water? So to me, when I look at my work at Fluxion, I think about, am I working in that direction? How do we ensure responsible consumption of water so that we don't, we've already gone at a breakneck speed. Right? Now, can we actually reduce that consumption? Can we actually help people correct their paths? Can we help industries, society at large actually make their consumption under certain limits, right? So yeah, I mean, we really have to start introspecting on how are we consuming our resources.
Ganesh, we know what you wish to achieve. We know what Fluxgen really wants to do for the planet. We still don't know how Fluxgen is doing it. So let's get a little deeper into the operations. What exactly is that you guys do that is allowing you to achieve what you wish to achieve?
Yeah, so what we believe is that if you don't, I mentioned this earlier as well, if you don't measure, you can't manage, right? And we digitize water infrastructure to help take corrective action. And the solution to water is in water itself. Just like, you know, water as a liquid is transparent and clear, we make the data of water transparent and clear and help facilities. Now we've started, while we have been able to do it in industries, now we have started working with the municipality as well. So we digitize water and help in taking corrective actions. So I'll give you an example, right? One of those facility, dairy facility, which is actually a water stress area, right? And we've been able to figure out that they actually even had this industries had to shut down for some time because of unavailability of water, and they would not be able to produce milk. So we went there and realized that while there is not so much scarcity, but they still had enough water there. They were getting water from tankers. They were not utilizing this water in the most effective way. So when we digitized this infrastructure, we were able to identify where there was leakage, where there was wastage, where there was excessive usage. So our software was able to give them such alerts. It used to take days together, weeks together, months together to find out where this leakage or wastage or excessive usage was happening with their existing means, like the visual inspection and other things. Using our platform, they were able to get all these things. They were able to arrest all this inefficiency to reduce water consumption by up to 25%. And now they've also been able to start analyzing their rainwater harvesting fixtures and analyze their water storage during rainwater. And that has improved them. So their dependency on water from external grid actually reduced. And at the same time, their wastewater treatment, which was actually not working at all, they were able to improve it, fix it. And now they know what is the performance of their wastewater. So they can utilize part of their wastewater for some of their water needs. So, as I said before this, they had no clue what's going wrong with their facility with respect to water. Now they have a clear understanding how to actually become water positive, how to ensure that overall facility would not be under any risk because of the water crisis. So like this, whatever we have done at this small facility, of course, we now have serviced more than 100 industries. Now we want to take this tech stack. We believe we are an end-to-end water, full-stack water, to take at a larger scale to fix the problem of water with that simple belief, just like how water as a liquid is transparent and clear. If you make the data of water transparent and clear and build solution on top of it, we can fix water crisis globally.
Ganesh, you mentioned you have an AI and IoT-based solution. So what is stopping businesses all around India from adopting FluxGen? What is the bottleneck? Why can't I just go to 100 businesses and be like, this is going to help you, this is going to help your company, it's going to reduce your expenses, and it's going to make you more sustainable? What is the challenge of onboarding different companies? What is the challenge of making each company water positive? How does that work?
See, I would like to ask you, 1 hour before, were you aware that the water that you are consuming, what was the implication of it? How does it connect it to the larger challenge of society, right? And I hope my conversation with you are at least a bit enlightened on certain aspect, right? And you guys come from one of the world's best universities. You guys went to Purdue, right? If that is the case, not trying to say that you guys know that the truth is that despite good education from various level, people are unaware of the water challenges. My belief is, firstly, the awareness of this water crisis has not hit the boardrooms, right? And it has not hit the production engineer, or it has not hit important decision makers. My effort over here is also to make sure that is known to all. And when that's known to all, I think we should just have zero marketing budget to sell it everywhere. Because once it's known, and then they will act. Unfortunately, the biggest hurdle today is people still don't know what catastrophic mess we are actually getting into and how it will affect them immediately and in the future. So if that information is disseminated in a right manner, if that's the crystal ball, we should have it.
How much do you cost, Ganesh?
See, it depends. I mean, depending on the site, based on the water infrastructure, depending on the diameter of the pipe and various other things.
Can you take an example and run with it? Just like any example that you've worked with. Don't name them if you don't wish to, and then just run with it.
See, each site is different, right? I mean, each site is different. Their challenges are different. But if you insist, what I would say is there is a cost associated to various services of LuxGen. If it's a compliance-related solution where they just want to not mess with the government, there is a groundwater-related regulation, there's a piezo sensor that shove in and put the water flow meter solution. And so it would be about 3 to 4 lakhs or something like that, right? I mean, depending on just that groundwater related compliance. But then they want to go and want to become water positive, then there'll be bunch of sensors that we have to put. And depending on the size of the facility, we have to put around 30 water flow meter and some 4-5 level sensors and water quality. It depends, again, on what all are the monitoring points, and it can be 10 to 15 times the cost, what I mentioned for the compliance, right? So it depends, I mean, on what the exact need of it, right? There is a water management for a textile or a dyeing industry is very different from water management for a iron and steel industry, right? I mean, the diameter of pipes in iron and steel is as big as this. I mean, for a textile, it might be as small as this. So so there is no specific. So see, the thing is, if I have to answer Vishrut's question, why everybody is not buying our solution, or why everyone is not? They just think still the freshwater availability is there. Why should I even care about managing this water? That's why the answer to your initial, this one is that they don't know that where they're actually, what's the risk that they're having today? What is the business risk they have? What's the long-term business risk they have? Where they can actually shut down, or they can actually get a very bad reputation if they don't manage. So they don't know. That's the reason. If not, they would have taken this decision long before. They're just seeing from only economic lens, which is...
Ganesh, then I will counter one of the points you said. You said our marketing budget should be zero. I feel the marketing budget on this should be very heavy. It should be like a huge marketing budget.
No. If this awareness was there, our marketing budget would have been zero. Okay. Okay. I'll tell you, one of our biggest marketing happened with zero budget and without our awareness. One day, actually, I mean, a very funny story. I was on a Sunday morning. My wife had given, I mean, she does heavy lifting in all possible ways for the family. I feel very guilty about it. I don't contribute much. And Sunday, she just asked me to take care of our son for 1 hour. I was like, I tried my best, but in between, I took the phone. And then she was yelling at me. And suddenly, my father calls me saying that, hey, what are you doing? Prime Minister Modi spoke about your work in Mann Ki Baat. I'm like, what? How did he come to know? I didn't even know that is happening. I missed that golden moment. So it's come to the level that the solution is so important that even the Prime Minister of our country had to speak about it openly by saying FluxGen is that company which helps in identifying the inefficiencies in the water network, right? I was like, blown. So technically, that's the kind of marketing that is required for people to understand why we are in such a mess, and we have to. But I do agree there are many other companies are doing amazing work, many startups. I have deep respect. I still feel we are super lucky that he mentioned our company's name for what we are doing. So we today use that video in all our presentation in the end.
Dude, use it, juice it out, man. You have the greatest marketing icon this country has seen mentioning your company. I mean, he has single-handedly brought down the economy of the Maldives. So let's not, dude. And I mean, his statement that, you know, don't do weddings abroad and all that, like,
I think some 40-50% of weddings abroad were cancelled after that. Like, there has been, Mr. Modi is a marketing genius in itself. That is for sure. But however, my question to you, the reason I was saying, why can't we implement it everywhere or what can we do? It's from a very, very selfish angle again. So we spoke to Narayan. Okay, what Narayan is doing is he is creating energy from waves. So he is using, you know, the kinetic energy in waves to generate electricity. That is his product. Now, once we spoke to him, I had a basic idea that Calcutta is next to a river. We have the Ganga flowing right beside us. There are a bunch of tributaries, canals, this, that. I was like, there has to be a way that we can utilize this water to generate some electricity. When I was going around, I saw a lot of factories, a lot of industrial areas disposing their water in these canals and very carelessly. So my thought is, if FluxGen and if FluxGen can come through and see a lot of these or spread the awareness to these people that their wastewater, I'm not even saying the water positivity is step two. I want to understand if this wastewater can be utilized by them and can bring them some profitability. Because at the end of the day, businesses want profit. You know, whatever you tell them about sustainability and this, that, and the other, they'll be like, yaar, mujhe ye sab nahi pata, meko dhanda bata. They're like, we want profit. So whatever you package to them in whichever way, at the end of the day, has to drive some profit. So this wastewater that they are, you know, just disposing, if there is a solution that FluxGen can come up with or something that we can do that will allow wastewater to be utilized in multiple industries and reused or recycled or do something in order to generate energy or whatever it is, I think that will be revolutionary.
See, I totally agree, right? And with respect to profits drive various motives, right? Let me ask you this question. In an average industry, what is the cost? Where does the cost of water come in the top 100 costs?
I have no idea, man.
When the lower third.
It doesn't even come in top 10 in many countries, many places.
Yeah.
So if you are talking about profitability, you're talking about bottom line with respect to this, right? If the bottom line improvement is not so significant, I might as well do something else, right? See, the most important thing any industry or any company would do is think about their improving their top line. That's their first focus, improving the top line. And of course, there are some businesses where the bottom line is very critical and they start thinking about it. And in that, they will look at the top 5 costs. And they find out what is the small have to do that is big enough to matter. If it is not even the top 5, then they say like, let's do it next year. This year, this is more important. Right. So at the end of the day, water, unfortunately, is not a very expensive or rather even a nominally charged commodity because we are using the future reserve of water, which actually is intergenerational justice. So the long story short is it is the unit economics of water is not sexy.
I am a huge supporter of capitalism. And I believe that capitalism is what pushes society forward. And it actually pushes quality of life forward. And we have seen numerous examples of that. The problem with capitalism, or the one supplement that capitalism needs, is a referee. And that referee generally comes in the form of a government and in the form of policy. When a lot of stakeholders are involved, in the case of pollution, in the cases of water, then that referee needs to step in because it's for the welfare of so many people that it is unavoidable. Right? And maybe water filtration needs to come with a lot of penalties, which I'm sure there are in India. I don't know how heavily they are implemented or how strictly they are implemented. Maybe water conservation needs to come with penalties in India. Again, in the episode with Manish, he said that we are supposed to have two forms of water reserves. One is called brown water and the other is something else. One of them is supposed to just go to the sewers and the other is supposed to actually go into reserves because it's filterable water and a lot of us don't even do that. Right. So I feel that government will play a huge role in this, where this becomes one of the lead priorities of companies. Otherwise, they can't even run. Right. Otherwise, it's not viable. They're not allowed to. right? Do you think government is playing that part? Do you think you have been able to affect government to, in addition, play that part?
I think government of late is doing its part. Again, let me come to talk about India. Another question. When did we have a Ministry of Water after our independence?
Last 20 years?
No, actually 5 years back. Till then, we never had a Ministry of Water. So it's like 70 years of independence, and India actually never, in that 70 years of independence, India never had a water. It was like minor irrigation, major irrigation, something on pollution, environment ministry. Water was not even one single ministry. Today we have Jal Shakti Ministry. It's not even actually 5 years, less than 5 years, to be honest. Right. So today, government has actually been brave enough to even make a report by Niti Aayog tell where we stand in water. Do check that Niti Aayog report of 2018, right? And it talks about where India's, the numbers that I stated, all that 21 indigenous cities is running out of groundwater, 70% of India's water is contaminated. It's all from the Niti Aayog's government report. It's not from any third party report, right? So, and then after that, the government has actually started looking at how do we solve this. To first accept the problem is at least some way you have started really well, right? So, now the government has started working on mechanisms on solving it. One very, I mean, since you mentioned capitalism, right? Even government to an extent wants to utilize the philosophy of capitalism to solve it. So, government of India identified 75 water startups in India to actually fix the problem of our urban water challenges. So, Ministry of Housing and Urban Affairs came up with the Amrit Mission, Atal Mission for urban replenishment and using technology. I've been a little wrong in the complete full form. Amrit Mission, especially the Amrit 2.0, they identified 75 startups and gave something like a 20 lakh grant to actually come up with a pilot. And then they would scale some of the things that would have done. So in a way, government is trying to do, but the history of the water, it has accumulated so fast that now we have to accelerate this solving it. But you guys are in your probably mid-20s, and I like that enthusiasm on capitalism. Even today I'm in agnostic about this one. So I'll ask you a question. Is Israel a capitalist country or a socialist?
And we're back to Israel.
Tell me, is it a capitalist or a socialist?
I think it's capitalist.
It's a capitalistic country, right? But
I think it's fully capitalistic.
It's fully capitalistic, right? But there's an exception to that. Israel has made a mandatory rule that even the water that falls on your roof doesn't belong to you. It belongs to government. So it is socialism at extreme that you, even if you are holding any glass or bucket and it falls onto that bucket, that doesn't belong to you. The whole water in Israel belongs to Israel government.
Ganesh, in fact, adding on to Israel, the other place which I have read about, which has done a superb job with its water, is Las Vegas. Las Vegas, Nevada has one of the best water management systems out there. And for a town that is so popular with the tourists, it's in the middle of the desert. It gets like, you know, a fifth of the water that it deserves or like that it's required. And even then, it is doing a brilliant job of water management. So I would definitely recommend you check it out for sure, because you are in this field and I think you will understand a lot better than I did. But pivoting from FluxGen and water conservation and, you know, government and Israel, I would like to talk about you, Ganesh. Let's get a bit about you. Who is Ganesh? What is, you know, what have you done? What has gotten you to this point? Let's have a, you know, give us a little bit about you. What are you up to? What is Ganesh all about?
I don't know. I still don't know how to answer this question, but let me put an effort, right? And I'll try to keep my work and FluxGen away from this discussion, this part of the discussion. So I think if I truly think about it of myself, I am always in pursuit of beauty than anything else. I think you can have various pursuit in life, but One way you can actually stay young or stay full fun or I don't know, is when you're in always in constant pursuit of beauty. Unfortunately, I'm in a messy work, but in that also, I try to see how I can see beauty in it. So, yeah, I mean, I'm very fortunate to have parents who have been extremely liberal in what I wanted to do. Whatever decision I took, they have been supportive or not been a critic or just been, rather, they have also been a bit agnostic about it than actually in this side or that side. So I grew up in a middle-class family. And of course, I didn't have that abundance. So that also made me a bit disciplined in some aspect. I grew up in this place called BTM Lot in Bangalore. I still love painting. Most of my childhood was all about artwork. I love cricket. I used to love cricket rather. Today I don't play much, and sports was a very important part, integral part of my life. I was not good at studies. Later, you know, because of all the peer pressure and all that happens in the society, my parents did never force me to study, or they never wanted me to be a rank holder. They just wanted to be fine in whatever way I am. But, you know, I did. And I always thought, like, whatever is a mainstream world, that is flawed. I should do something outside that. Or I thought the mainstream is boring, if not flawed, right? Always thought, like, what is that we're all missing? And can I find that out? If that's what I can do, it would be fun. And I don't know. I mean, I grew up in this city, Bangalore, and I did most of my education here itself. I am also a beneficiary of socialism, by the way. I went to semi-government or government-funded institutes, and got some of the finest education. I did my master's at the Institute of Science with all the public fund, or the scholarship that I got was because of the taxpayers' money. So I always felt that I've got that privilege. I never think that if I've done well in an exam, it's because I was intelligent. I probably was in the side of privilege that I could get access to food, access to all that privilege to actually even... So the world does, there's no level playing in this world, right? So I always feel like whatever I have today is because I had the privilege. And I never feel any achievement as achievement. It's rather a responsibility. So that's a bit about me. If I have to, I love people, talking to people, like people like you. I enjoy talking to you. So the moment you guys reached out to me, I was super keen that the conversation that I have with you will be recorded, and I would be able to see this someday in my life, and I would also be able to I would have a time machine that way because of this. So I enjoy talking to people. I like writing. I used to write a lot of blogs. Today I write on LinkedIn. I'm a businessman. I'm trying to convert my interest in writing to the benefit. I used to work with a company called General Electric. I was working in aerospace business and energy business. I do remember at one point of time, disenchanted that I applied, for a Vancouver film school for a script writing. I thought that this is not, I'm not this. I want to get into a film career. Obviously I don't have the thing for acting, but at least for the writing, I thought I'll write, become a scriptwriter. But yeah, when I heard back from them, they actually wanted to take the application forward. But when I heard back that it cost some $40,000 to do it, I was like, oh no, this is not my career. And then, of course, and then the next thing was actually I did was leaving my job to start a fresh career as an entrepreneur. Another very important part of me is cycling. As I said, I still don't have a driving license. I cycle to work. And I do cycle rides like on national holidays. Indian national holidays, like Bangalore to Goa is one of my favorite trip. We've done rides to Kanyakumari, Chennai, Mangalore. So this January 26th is coming. If you guys are in Bangalore or in India, you guys can join for the ride. So I've not missed a national holiday ride, especially Independence Day ride for last 12 years. And to me, that's, how long I've been able to do this ride is how long I've been able to have this kick in idealism. And that's like for me a measure of not just kick in idealism, is also my it's like a full body checkup as long as I could do. I'm sorry, it was too much of a monologue about me, but yeah.
No, dude, it was perfect. I think both Akhil and I are loving every minute of this because there is so much to you, and you're being, I love how open you're being with us. You know, Ganesh, it's very easy to get conscious. It's very easy to just close up. But thank you so much for being very, very open about everything and just being straight from the heart.
Thank you. You guys are very kind.
Ganesh, if I'm a young person, very driven, want to make a change to this world, and, you know, I just watched this podcast. I just watched this episode to this point. Or I'm about to watch a short. Why will I come and work for you? How can I come and work for you? And, you know, what should drive me for you to hire me?
I ideally don't want people to think of them working this one, right? I mean, like, work for me. That's, I want everybody should work for themselves. I mean, I tell my people, you guys should be super selfish. You should be thinking about your career. Screw this company. I mean, you should be thinking about your career above all. Right? I mean, like, if you are thinking about this company and this one, it's not necessary that I'll be the guy in this company forever. And even I might lose my mind, right? And I might become a different guy, right? So don't work for a company. Work for your career. So what I would tell that person is, I was working in a company where I felt that I was felt like the company never valued my career. The company always valued their targets, their numbers, and so. Even before I was thinking about sustainability, climate, and things, which was very important, but to be honest, more than that, because I wanted to build a company where people feel it's their career. The company values their career above their company's financial targets, company's the targets. So if somebody looking at this, I always aspire to build that how can this company help your career? What is that you want to do? And if it is aligned, then come and work with us. We will make your career. I will not even make your career. You'll make your career great. We'll probably provide you a platform so that we'll give you a playground to run. So that's the, and you know, again, for me, as I said, the mainstream is so boring. So can I build a company which is not so mainstream, which is an alternate career path, though it is solving something, a big problem, right? So that's something that I look for in people. Like if the moment I get a person who just looks only about working for the company, they might eventually be a misfit to this organization. But people with career aspiration, they want to be great at building the next generation or whatever it is, like sales engine, I don't know, or build the next hardware to solve the water problem, or find a way to reduce water consumption, or find the most craziest way to build the marketing campaign. They're thinking for themselves. They want to try it, and they want to use a place like Fluxgen. I like that kind of people. Then people who are thinking about, if I work, this company will help me become that. No, actually, unfortunately, this is the wrong place. If you think the company will help you and help you to do, it's like, to me, everybody in this organization are like entrepreneur in themselves. I mean, you today use various terms like entrepreneurs and all those things. For me, that entrepreneurial mindset, I want to work on my own and I get to do it, and nobody actually stops me from doing, even if I make mistakes. So I it may be too cliche to say that we even reward when people make mistakes because they took this thing. But the core idea is that how do you build a good virus? How do you build a company that grows on its own, where in which it you don't have to control or you don't limit? So to me, that's this organization. Can we build be that good virus where you scale on your own? Like you don't need a centralized system to scale, but you are that nobody. Everybody, see, all of us come with the same lungs, eyes, and this one, right? So ideally, I don't consider myself. I wouldn't call anybody as, oh, he works under me or this one. I would say we are colleagues. That's the world I want to be, where everybody feels that even if they're talking to the VP or this one, oh, it's my colleague. Like, who it is? Like, let's not get to that. That's a place I want to be.
Let's make it even more clear, because, you know, I have done a lot of job searches in my life. It is very daunting as to how vague everything is. And yes, I want entrepreneurial spirit is definitely something that is amazing, but it is so hard to define. Like, for the person coming in, giving an interview, it's very difficult to define and convince you, right? Let's go with three absolutely essential things that you will look for in the person sitting across the table from you in order for you to be like, yeah, let's go, you know, become a partner to the firm.
See, to be honest, talent is overrated, in my opinion, right? Attitude is everything, right? And I wouldn't look for people with great, right? I mean, so-called this one, right? The pedigree, and it's great. I mean, I'm not against that, right? But to me, the attitude, right? I mean, what is that they like to do? And why do they want to work with us? That simple answer, many times answer, is enough, right? I mean, like, and also, what can I mean, can we actually get somebody who's determined and absolutely a misfit in other organizations? Like, I mean, or in the mainstream world, right? Like, I don't want to name this person, but one of, I also used to teach at the Institute of Science as a adjunct faculty, and this person pinged me saying that he met somebody. He actually is an engineer, and because he could not get a job because he doesn't speak great English and things like that, he's cleaning in a hotel restaurant, and he feels very bad that this guy, despite all this thing, is doing this. I told, can you connect me to him? I want to talk to this guy, right? And this guy comes and he talks to me, and he has difficulty to talk to me in English. In fact, to be honest, I didn't know how to speak English till I went to my engineering, right? So I could understand that world where you would not know how to communicate. And I asked him, what do you like to do? He said, whatever you give me, I'll be able to do. Can I do this? I'll try to do it. So we gave him an internship, and today he is like great. I mean, like the fact that he had the attitude that in order to pay bills, whatever is required, I'll do it. Right. So to me, there's willpower, right? And he might not be as great in terms of the so-called trajectory of a career where this guy would scale very fast in his career. But to me, that's beauty, right? Somebody who actually chose to do what is required to pay bills and willing to do anything and join us and build his career, right? And so eventually it comes back to that whole pursuit of beauty. Can you actually, there is no such thing, since you asked this question, that what is the three qualities, right? It is like, to me, even if there are four different things that is a cross mark and there's one thing that is an appealing thing, that's okay, right? I mean, So I wouldn't have that thing that, okay, this is it. I'll take this guy because it is the stigma, right? If there is one crazy thing in that person, which that person is doing. So, but at the same time, we can't scale a company by looking at all those crazy. At the end of the day, good at heart is more than enough, to be honest. And coachable is something that makes it even easy to take that person, right? And many times we don't even take full time, we take people as interns. So I have this strong Gen Z. I love Gen Z. You guys are Gen Z. I mean, that's why I was, when you guys reached out to me, I was like, okay.
We are millennials, dude.
Oh, millennials. You're all in mid-20s.
94, 96.
Okay. But anyway, so the thing is, I really think that this college grads, you know, they're like in this college they're studying. They have very fresh mind, right? And it's always nice to give them an internship. So I tell my team today, I was telling, like, see, you guys, assume you just put 10 hours of your month in working with some young minds, and to get 100 hours of your work done from them, you're doing two things. One, you're increasing the productivity of the company. Second thing is preparing the pipeline for talent to the company, right? So, yeah, I mean, if you are a college student, you think this is fun, you can always reach out to us. I mean, I feel you guys must be much smarter than me.
All the contact details for Ganesh, for FluxGen, for the pipeline, for whoever wants to get in touch is down below. So whoever wants to get in touch, everything is in the description. So check that out. Get in touch with Ganesh. If you have trouble getting in touch with Ganesh, reach out to us and we'll connect you to Ganesh. So Ganesh, question of the hour. If I give you $2 million, what are you going to do with it?
I'll not do an next fundraise.
What are you going to do with the money though?
I'll put all that money into FluxGen. All that money into Flux. If you had asked me this question 10 years back, I would have not had an answer. But today it's very clear. My highest amount of focus today is in building this company. So I'd put all that $2 million.
What will FluxGen do with that $2 million?
See, I would actually, there are two pieces to it. It's sales and product, right? And obviously, I would utilize, we have a working product from Tata Steel to Adani to Aditya Birla. Everybody uses our product. So we have grown product and they have given repeat orders. How do I make sure that all the 1,000 SEBI-registered companies in India, top listed companies, get our solution? So I would build a sales strategy and a GTM to ensure that everybody of that, this one, can actually get to know about us and being able to utilize our existing product. The remaining part of the money I would actually put into the product team to make sure that the product is the platform of choice to the world, like, and ensure that we are able to make sure that we have created that huge market differentiation, entry barriers, so that we can actually be the market leader in the space. Since you told me $2 million, I told you specific to India market. If you give me another $2 million, I would utilize it to do the same thing, to expand outside India and be a global player.
Ganesh, you're building something incredible, and I feel like it's high time that we realize that this is a real, real issue. Water is a real issue and we need to open our eyes. Especially you opened my eyes. My brain was just going boink, boink, boink. Like, how do I not know this? It's so stupid, right? So finally, Ganesh, to end our lovely conversation, we have a tradition on our podcast. The last guest has left you a question and we would like you to leave a question for the next guest. The question we have for you is, what keeps you driving even after years of trying and not making it?
Again, the answer is pursuit of beauty. I'm still trying to find that, what is that beautiful thing I'm able to build. That if not for the world, at least for myself, I feel that joy all through my life. Whenever I think about it, I should feel great about it. So that's what drives me. That pursuit of beauty probably is going to invariably solve a lot of challenges the humankind is facing. But if there's no beauty in it, then I would rather not do it year after year.
What would be your question, Ganesh?
My question to